is going on, everybody? And thanks again for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, and as always, the man beside me, Big Fizzy Kyle Filson. What's going on, bud?
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in Skeleton Studios, finally, after a hiatus that was longer than anticipated. I apologize. Let me fill you in. If you're an Elite member, you've already heard the story, but for everybody else, they don't know. The reason I haven't been around, I haven't been on the podcast, haven't been around for Cameron's Cryptid Classroom, is because my father-in-law passed away. Over a year ago, he was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. He's been fighting that battle for a long time with chemotherapy, all types of experimental drugs. Anyways, his health has declined very rapidly. He lived by himself. He fell down. He went to take a bath, got in the bathtub, and realized he was too weak to get out of the bathtub, left his cell phone in the living room, and he pretty much laid in the bathtub for 30 hours because he didn't have the strength to get out of the tub. The only reason he was found is his son, my brother-in-law, went to the house to pick him up to take him to a doctor's appointment, found him there. He said he was cold. He was naked the whole time. The way he kept warm is he kept turning hot water on, and he would fill up, soak till it got cold, drain it, repeat. But anyways, at that moment, we knew he couldn't take care of himself. So he was moved into a spare bedroom at my house where he was put on hospice. And there was going to be nurses and things to take care of him. And we would, you know, just take care of him for the last days of his life, try to make him as most comfortable as possible. We thought that would be a long process. Turned out it wasn't. He was in our house for about 8 days, I think. So his health went downhill. Like the first day he walked in there. By day number three, like, he couldn't get out of bed. And so
we were there, I guess, the last day he was pretty much conscious.
Man, thank God you did, because yeah, we had some paperwork that needed to be filled out. Your wife's a notary, so you were able to come over with her and sign some of the last documents that needed to be signed. Anyway, so his health was doing, I mean, he went downhill. He wasn't eating anything. He was drinking only. Yeah. And my wife's sister, she stayed at the house the whole time. So my wife, her sister, and me were basically taking care of my father-in-law around the clock. They did more work than me. I'm not trying to get credit. But I would have to literally pick him up out of bed, hold him while they changed him and changed the bed linens. And this probably happened every 4 hours. So there's a house full of people. Emotions are high. Sleeping schedule is totally messed up. My work schedule is totally messed up. Because of COVID-19, there's a lack of nurses. And what nurses are available are sent to people's homes that need more help. He's pretty much can't get out of the bed. So it's not, you know what I mean? It's not a major thing. It's an annoyance, but it's not a major thing. So we just said, hey, we understand. We'll do the best we can. Now somebody would come out there once a day to check everything. But that's the way it went. And then, of course, he passed away. And so people have been coming in and out. People were before he passed away, people were coming over to pay their last respects, to talk to him, to see him. People from out of state. I mean, it was like, you know.
Everybody, you know, y'all know how it goes. If you've been involved, you know how it goes.
So that's where I've been. Little Fizzy, he's been coming over to Skeleton Studios.
Been hanging out with me.
Knocking out intros for Cameron's Cryptid Classroom, which, congratulations, that seems like it's really doing
good. It's been fun, yeah.
People seem like they really like that. But, you know, just to get the kids out of the house. But that's where we've been. So I'm back now. That's all over. The memorial will go out or will happen this Saturday. But after that, I should be free and clear. Thank you. I know that a lot of people have been responding on Facebook and Instagram and things like mm-hmm. that. So thank you so much for understanding. It's a tough time. January's lately have been pretty
bad.
It's
not your month, man.
Man, the previous January, COVID almost got me. I was in the hospital for 8 days. Thought that was over. This January was just as hard. Actually harder for me.
Yeah.
When I was sick, I just pretty much laid there, watched Tremors and stupid television. Also hyped up on meds, you know.
Yeah, and then they gave you some kind of sleeping pill, which turned you into like a psychopath.
Ambien. Yeah. Never had it before. Won't have it again. But apparently I was crazy.
Yeah.
Like more crazy than normal.
It got really bad.
My wife already knows I'm crazy. So if she's claiming, like, how crazy?
Yeah. When she pulls me aside, and she before we left that day, and she's like, I need to tell you what he was doing. I'm like, I don't want to hear this story.
You hear all the horror stories of people like emailing their boss at 3 a.m, like pretty much telling them off, then going to work the next day. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm fired.
Yeah.
I was like that. Like, not the emailing part, but like, I literally don't remember any of it.
I think you've told everybody what you said, that Luke, you thought Luke was in like a Top Gun program.
I thought he was in like a Top Gun fighter pilot program. I don't even know where that, I'm just like, man, I hope he does good. You know, man, I hope Jester doesn't get
just
him.
Just being like a regular dad.
I know he said he wanted Viper, but I don't, you know, yeah. I don't know. But
that's good stuff.
Yeah, but man. Yeah,
that's where I'm that's glad, what's been going on.
Glad I'm back. During my stint at the house with relatives coming in and out, you know, we just kind of stay out of the way. I broke down and bought the fight. I normally don't do that because it's a ripoff. And,
yeah.
But my hat's off to Dustin Diamond Poirier
mm-hmm.
against Conor McGregor. It was a great fight. I think from a fighter's or from a person who watches a lot of fighting, I think what's happened to Conor, now I'm not saying he's not great. He is great. I think just that hunger's gone. He's yeah. successful. When you're super successful, you don't have that hunger. You don't have that drive.
As you do when you're like a plumber's apprentice.
Yeah.
When you're an Irish plumber's apprentice, you want to fat a lot more than whenever you're a millionaire.
I don't think, I think Conor's only had like two fights in the last 3 years.
I wouldn't, the only thing I would ever fight again if I were Conor was sleep. That'd be a bad hit. That's as hard as I'd push myself. I'd have to fight sleep.
Just
That's
sell
it.
Proper 12.
Yeah.
Raise your son. Drive around with your awesome suits and your awesome rings and wristwatches that are cool. Just
live the
that.
Rest of your life. Just be awesome.
But I guess it's that mentality. Like, they just don't want to stop.
He keeps taking beatings the way Dustin laid one on him. He won't have that kind of mentality anymore.
Well, he said he'll be back. He said he's not done. I'm like,
no,
dude, just go
you.
Away.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of just going away, I have a story here. First of all, Lon, I love Lon because anything that has to do with hunting, it's always the heads up.
I need to speak with you. February 19th, we're going to be on Lon's show.
Okay. Well, there y'all go, folks. See, I don't get asked. We just get told. So here we go. And I got to bring this up. You're going to like this. Here's the heading, Kyle. Experiencer recalls gray alien incident while deer hunting in Wisconsin.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. No. That's the last thing I need to hear. It's dark. You're walking to the stand. Next thing you hear.
And then this one bright light comes down.
See the
on
leg
you.
Move like in the movie Signs from behind a tree. I'm like, nope, I'm going back to the truck.
Yep. Truck blind this morning. This is what it says. This incident happened in October of 1998, and I am beginning to recall what happens in recent years. I once thought that it was a vivid dream, but now I believe that this was an actual event. My father and I were deer hunting with bow and arrow near Schulzburg, Wisconsin, in Lafayette County. I was 15 years old at the time. A deer walked under my tree stand, and I took a shot. And I waited for my father to return to my tree stand as he was about a mile away in his own stand. This was well after dark. I told him that I had taken a shot, and we proceeded to follow the blood trail together. As we were walking through the field following the trail, I observed a violet light hovering over the tree line going from left to right.
No, no.
I told my father, and he didn't pay much attention because he was following the blood trail, and he told me to quit messing around. I had shined my flashlight at the light, and it darted off towards the woods very fast. After some time, the trail stopped, and my father said we would resume search in the morning, but he had thought that I probably had brisket shot the deer too low and it wasn't even going to kill it.
Hey, did y'all see that real bright light?
Exactly, yeah. That night, we ate dinner cooked by the Coleman stove and got ready for bed in the back of his old 73 Chevy pickup. It had a metal cab on the back, and I remember windows on the side and in the back. My dad snored loud, and I remember him snoring that night. As I was laying in the back of the truck, at some point of the night or early morning, I remember having a frightening feeling that someone was watching me, to the point I didn't want to open my eyes. I did, and through the side window saw what I think was the big-eyed, large-head gray looking back at me.
Mm-mm.
I closed my eyes again and heard what was like a mechanical voice telling me, "We are not going to hurt you." Then something made me open the back window of the truck cab and get out. When I did, I observed three short and two taller, large-head, big-eyed, gray aliens, and that a disc-shaped craft landed in the field about 200 foot from the truck. I remember the little ones touching my fingers and leading me toward the craft saying, "Do not be scared," in a mechanical voice that seemed to be in my head. That's all I remember. I woke up in the back of the truck and thinking that that was a vivid, scary dream, and it has bothered me since it happened. And to this day, when I see an image on TV or in print of an alien gray, it sends chills down my spine.
Yeah, because you were taken. Nobody just casually dreams that.
That doesn't, right? That's not
moments after seeing a strange violet light hovering above you.
Yeah, that's not something you want to be part of.
Man.
Could you, first of all, just to get out of the truck, I don't know that I could have got out of the truck. I think I'd have just been like, I'm just going to tough it out. But to open it and climb out, and then there they are, and then you remember them holding you by the fingers, leading you to the craft.
That person seriously needs to go and, like, see a hypnotherapist or whatever.
Yeah, like regression?
Yeah, they need to do
and
regression.
Find out. Find out would be
what
awesome.
Happened. Or maybe you don't.
Yeah, you might not want to know.
Because that would probably mess you up.
I wouldn't want to know. Like, we've talked about it before. If I ever, y'all will never know if I have some kind of crazy thing like that happen, because I'm not telling anybody. I'm going to be like,
No, why would you? I don't want to know. Like, I don't, they're like, no, it's real easy, Kyle. We can.
And I both know someone who believes but doesn't want to know.
Oh, yeah. A lifetime of strange things.
Yeah, lifetime is like, I don't want to know.
moving on. Check this out. This comes from one of our listeners named Ben. Said, I had an interesting experience that stemmed from a paranormal investigation. I work at a radio station in Fort Worth, which is haunted. It's the Jet Building in downtown. One night, while I was on the air, we had a team of investigators come in and set up audio and video recording devices, along with a few tools for detecting the spirits. While there, one of the investigators mentioned me being an antenna for that kind of stuff. There was one spirit that had communicated with them, and the spirit said it did not like me, especially being in the basement, which is where I do a lot of my work.
Nothing like a ghost. Yeah, that dude pisses me off. Tell him.
That would be me. I mean, that would be my luck. I mean, people in real life don't like me. I'm sure in the afterlife they wouldn't like me either.
Exactly.
He said that someone was watching over me, and we later found out that it was my grandfather who had passed earlier that year. The night went on, and they picked up voices saying they were my grandfather, and another of the voices said it was my cousin who had passed years prior. Now, later that night, after other weird situations, I went home. At the time, I lived with an older woman, and her room was on the other side of the house. That night, I went to bed around 1:30, 2 in the morning, and I woke up around 3 a.m. I needed to use the restroom, which was across the hall from my bedroom. I closed my bedroom door behind me, since I have a dog, and I didn't want him wandering the house, as his claws are loud on the hardwood floors. I remember using the restroom, but halfway through going, I can't remember anymore. The last thing I remembered was standing in front of the toilet. The next thing I know, I hear what sounds like claws on the hardwood floor in the living room, followed by my roommate calling out to me, Ben, is that you? In my mind, I came to, looking in the mirror. Also, my dog was locked in my bedroom, and the roommate doesn't have any other pets. I responded and said yes, that I was using the bathroom. She said okay and stated that it was 6:15 in the morning. Later she told me, when she rounded the corner to make sure I was okay, that I was just standing with my arm against the door frame, facing in and looking into the pitch black dark bathroom. She said it startled her and that I looked at her with an angry look on my face, and I said, I had a bad night. And I went back to my room and closed the door. I can't account for 3 hours of time. I don't know what those claw sounds were that I heard in the living room, and I don't know how I got into that strange position in the doorway. I'm still baffled at what occurred as well. Several strange things happened during the investigation at the radio station, followed by that incident at my home. Altogether, a strange night. Feel free to reach out with any questions. I enjoy the podcast and have the sticker on one of my suitcases. Have a good one, Ben.
I don't even know where to start with that. You're talking missing time and, let's say, spirits usually don't go hand in hand.
Well, I agree with you. It seems like, okay, so it was evident that when the investigators were at the radio station where he worked, that one of the spirits didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he talked about how his grandfather and one of his cousins were kind of got his back and kind of, you know, kept that mm-hmm. other evil spirit at bay. I wonder if, you know, you hear about these things where people go to a haunted location, something attaches itself, mm-hmm. takes it home with him. I wonder if that spirit somehow attached itself to Ben and he went home.
I wonder if that was even Ben in the doorway communicating with the roommate.
Well, exactly.
Was that even it, or was it some sort of trickster? Was it, you know, what were they? Was he just caught up staring? Because I know most bathrooms, when you walk in the door, there's a mirror. Were you caught looking into that mirror, and that's where the connection was made, and you just got stuck?
It just,
you know, they're just looking in. Man, I don't. There's, yeah.
You know, I had a friend years ago who sister was a bad sleepwalker. And that kind of thing would happen. Nothing creepy, but like she would literally like get up and just like walk like she's going to go into the bathroom or go into the other room and would just stop there. And we would sometimes just sit and look, and she would sit there for, it probably could have been hours, but we would watch her for 10 minutes, never moved. It's like you're sleepwalking, so you don't really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
And just kind of like timed out.
But did she know she was a sleepwalker?
Well, she knew only because her mom and dad and brother and everybody had told her. That she was caught.
Yeah.
I knew another person that.
Because that's not what this sounds like.
No. Ben
doesn't sound like he was sleepwalking.
No, and I'm sure if he was a sleepwalker, he would have mentioned the history of that. This sounds like something that spurred from when he was at the radio station with those ghost investigators.
But 3 hours of missing time.
Man.
There's
a lot of people with missing time.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of the people who are sleep eaters?
Yes, I've heard of that, where they make full meals and all this stuff. Because that's where they talk about, like, you're talking about the people that will just eat random stuff.
Like, they wake up in the middle of the night, go to the cupboard, go to the pantry, go to the refrigerator, and just start eating. And then go back to bed.
Wake up and there's eating a whole jar of pickles.
Not aware of it. I'm not sure that's a real thing, or that's just a heavy person's excuse saying, oh, yeah, you know, that's.
I don't know what, because you're talking about the Ambien. There's people that have done crazy things on that
for
deal
sure.
There.
Oh, yes.
So, like, sleeping, of course, I don't understand sleep. Like I've talked multiple times, sleep are one of those things that I cannot wrap my head around why the human body needs it.
It is odd.
It's a very odd thing.
Yeah. Sharks don't sleep.
Well, look, nothing in your body changes, dude. You're still breathing. You're still thinking. Everything's still functioning. You're just unplugged. Why?
Imagine how much more you could get done.
If you didn't get tired, if you just ate and just kept going, and you were just bright-eyed and bushy-tailed drinking coffee. Yeah. So, but 3 hours, anytime there's missing time, I have an issue.
I agree with you. Because you don't know. Part of it is blamed on alien abduction. Some of the stories are blamed on time slips.
Well, it's easy to blame your brain. It's easy to blame the thing that. Maybe he got up, like he says, maybe it was like 3 o'clock, you know, if he got up, because he said he's had 3 hours. It was 6:15. Let's say it's, 3:15 to 6:15, right? It's easy to go, was it 3:15 or was it really like 5:45, you know, or 6 o'clock? And maybe I just dreamed. It's real easy to second guess yourself. Think of it this way. What if you woke up in the middle of the morning like that at 3 o'clock to go to the bathroom, and then all of a sudden your wife jolted you awake and you were standing in the hallway with 3 hours of missing time. But instead of 3 hours of missing time, you were missing 15 pounds of body weight.
That'd be great.
You say that, but how would you explain it? You look around, you're like, I'm 15 pounds lighter than I was when I got out of bed. Like you could physically see that you had lost weight
right.
overnight like that. People would take it much more serious than they do with this missing time.
Don't you hate it? When you like fall asleep and you wake up and you're like, and it's like 8 hours went by, you're like, man,
yes,
it's already time to go to work.
Yeah. Or like you wake up and you're like, please don't let it be 6 o'clock. Please don't let it. And you look and it's like 5:58. You're like, man, for real. So what are you going to be talking about today, man?
Well, let's take a break. And when I get back from the break, I'm going to be talking about some crazy Sasquatch Bigfoot sightings.
Love it.
I'm not talking about your average run of the mill sightings. I'm talking about the truly strange, the bizarre. So stick around, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. When it comes to cryptozoology, the all-time king has to be Bigfoot. Sasquatch, Yeti, Urin, Almosty, the Yowie, the Skunk Ape, the Grassman, or the hundred or more other names it goes by. Why do so many people claim to have seen the hairy beasts, whether you're from the mountains of Nepal to the swamps of Louisiana, from the wastelands of Australia to the suburbs of Connecticut? It seems that it has been seen everywhere. How can there be so many sightings from so many different locations, yet, even with all these sightings, no real physical proof, no skeletal remains, nothing. Just tracks, and sometimes people report seeing bits of hair stuck in a fence or on the bark of trees. And I know that people have sent them off to be studied. And Brian Sykes, I believe, is a researcher, scientist a couple years ago, said that his test showed that it was a cross between like a Siberian bear and a polar bear. You always get these stories, or you'll even hear stories of people who are like, well, the test results came back positive to an unknown creature, and it's been held under wraps, or some secret government task force swooped in and stole the DNA. I mean, the stories get wacky. And that's probably one of my favorite parts about this whole mythos surrounding Bigfoot. I know I talk about it on the show constantly. If you're a big fan and been listening for years, you know what my take is on Bigfoot. I always say that it depends on what day of the week you ask me. And what I mean by that is there are days where I'm like convinced it's real. And then there's other days I'm like, there's no way it can be real. How can that be real? How can we have never found anything? And so if you're asking me today, the day I'm recording this, as of right now, me recording this on today, I think that it's real. That's probably my favorite part, though, is the wide, broad range of all of the different sightings from all over the world. Like, it makes sense if it was only seen in one corner of the planet, like in British Columbia in the forest up there, or perhaps down in Indonesia or something like the Indava bird is. I'm like, yeah, it's very remote. I can see in my mind that's where a particular cryptid might exist. But this thing is seen everywhere. Like I said, even in suburbs of like New Jersey, there have been sightings. There have been sightings in the desert. You know, like we're an animal that big requires a lot of protein to stay alive. There's nothing out there unless it's catching owdad or mule deer. But I mean, it's a very hard and difficult place to survive. But they're seen everywhere, and they're different sizes, from the mountain peaks up in Tibet, you know, with the Yeti, down to, you know, the skunk ape, which some people theorize is nothing more than a pack of escaped orangutans. I don't know. But the sightings themselves is what I'm talking about on today's show. The bizarre. And which leads me to think that perhaps we're not dealing with a physical flesh and blood creature. No, perhaps it's something from another parallel universe, or perhaps another time, perhaps even another world. I don't know. There have been many sightings of Bigfoot shortly before or after a UFO sighting. Perhaps George Lucas got it right when he created this Wookiee character in the iconic Star Wars series, Chewbacca. I don't know. And most likely, never will know, but I love the stories. I think they're intriguing. And on today's show, I'm going to tell some truly crazy, outlandish Bigfoot reports. I think you're going to enjoy them. But starting off, let's start out with your average run-of-the-mill. Not that crazy, but still yet an interesting case. It's one of those ones that talks about it not being so much ape-like, but like it being a devolved human. A wild man. And I like those stories too. I mean, that's the thing, is I like the full gambit. I like the ones that make it seem like it's an extraterrestrial, all the way down to it's just a wild person who's gone completely feral. Check this out. This first account was published in 1896 in a book titled The Hermit of Siskiyou by L.W. Music. It's pretty cool. It says, note, a Del Norte record correspondent writing from Happy Camp, Siskiyou County, on January 2nd, 1886, discourses as follows. I do not remember to have seen any reference to the Wild Man, which haunts this part of the county. I shall allude to him briefly. Not a great while since Mr. Jack Dover, one of our most trustworthy citizens, while out hunting, saw an object standing 150 yards from him, picking berries and tender shoots from the bushes. The thing, whatever it was of gigantic size, about 7 feet high, with a bulldog-looking head, short ears, and long hair. It was also furnished with a beard and was free from hair on such parts of its body as is common among men. Its voice was shrill, or soprano, and very human, like that of a woman in great fear. Mr. Dover could not see its footprints as it walked on hard soil. He aimed his gun at the animal, or whatever it was, several times, more than once, but he could not bear it. He could not bring himself to fire. He said because it was so human-like, he couldn't bring himself to shoot. The range of the curiosity is between Marble Mountain and the vicinity of Happy Camp. A number of people have seen it, and all agree in their descriptions, except for some who make it taller than others. It is apparently herbivorous and makes winter quarters in some caves in Marble Mountain. So there, just like that, going back to 1886, the hunter describes a person or something. He's not sure what he saw. It looked like a wild man, a caveman, a Neanderthal or Denisovan. I don't know. But what in the world could he have seen up there? I mean, I don't know, but that's a common thread, even to sightings as recently as last summer, where hunters or people are out, they see something in the woods, they know it's not a bear, they go to shoot at it, and through the rifle scope, or if it's close enough to them, they say, man, it looks human. I can't bring myself to shoot. If it was me, I wouldn't shoot either. Not because it looks like a human, because I'd be scared that my bullet would have no effect on it, and then it would run up, and you've seen the Jack Lynx commercials. The thing would pull me apart with its bare hands. I'm not down with that. I'm just like, close my eyes, hum a little tune to myself, and hope the thing moves off. Let's get into some crazier stories. This particular one has to do with people who have befriended Bigfoot. You've heard of these, where people have a gifting spot or a gifting tree, or they leave food and snacks for Bigfoot. And I always find these stories intriguing because I'm always like, well, if you're having an ongoing relationship with this thing, like you can put out food just like you do with squirrels or with birds and you get them to come to it, wouldn't you call in a researcher or somebody of science to come? Because you're like, look, I've got these things in my back 40. They're coming in once a week. Get some game cam. You know, you would want to, you'd be able to back it up. Where the common person driving along an old country road happens to see something run across the road. Well, they don't have time to call anybody just after the fact. I like the stories where they're having an ongoing relationship with Bigfoot. And it always makes me wonder why they don't call authorities in. You know, and you'll hear them say, well, you know, I don't want them disrupted or, I don't want people bothering. I'm like, yeah, then I get that. Or is it really a convenient way of like, because you're making up the story, right? That's another problem. You know, you can't believe everything. I know I don't. I read hundreds of stories a month. And I have to say some of them I find really interesting. And some of them I'm like, man, I think this is completely made up. But anyways, moving on, coming to us from Cam's favorite website, the Cryptozoology News. A witness who claims to be a former state trooper from the state of Washington says that he had some pretty strange encounters with the unknown starting back in the year 2009. Now, if you remember a couple months ago, we had Pat Aiken on, who was also a sheriff's deputy, who also had a run-in with the Sasquatch, with the old couple there in Georgia. This guy's a state trooper, so similar backgrounds. The witness says that these encounters happened at a remote wilderness area in the North Cascades, also known as the Cascade Mountains, between British Columbia in Washington State. He claims that he first stumbled across a group of Bigfoot quite by accident, as he was scouting out an old mine up in the mountains. And while they remained shy at first, they began to get closer, as he would frequently leave food out for them. Now, these things he would leave included apples, carrots, beef jerky, cookies, and candy bars. Not only would they come incredibly close to him, but he also says that they spoke amongst themselves in a discernible yet incomprehensible language. The former trooper says all of this was weirdness. He says, and this is a quote from him, "I leave them food and they visit. Sometimes it's just 5 to 10 minutes. Other times they'll stick around for hours. I have been as close as 20 feet to some of them. They have a human-like face, some with dark hair, others more red or brown, probably 3 to 4 inches in length. They stand between 6 and 7 feet tall and probably weigh around 500 pounds, with the females being a little lighter. The females have small breasts. When I am alone, they are close. When others are with me, I'd say they stay 75 to 100 feet away. Females come the closest to me. They like some people, and some they do not. They sounded similar to Native American and Asian mix. I'm not in the forest to seek them. I look for something else. However, they appear to be getting closer to me each time. I do not try and take their picture or bother them in any way. I think they may be a primitive human species that we know very little about. They appear to me to be very intelligent." So see? Once again, now it's pretty interesting that he brings people sometimes. So it sounds like he probably brings his friend or his girlfriend or a cousin or something with him. So he mentions that he's brought other people. That's pretty interesting. But again, they seem to be a type of human. And it makes me wonder if there aren't some lost species out there, you know, like what's the one from Indonesia, the orang pendek that they found recently, which is like, you know, something from Lord of the Rings, like a dwarf, like it's a fully mature 3-foot-tall humanoid that, you know, they believe went extinct, you know, 12,000 years ago or something. Perhaps it didn't. But then again, there comes the bone thing. But maybe if people came across the bones of this thing, they would just, oh, I don't know, think it was the bones of a skeletal remains of a child or something. I don't know. Anyways, there's another very similar account that comes from yet another former state trooper, this time in the state of Michigan, who has also encountered what they claim are Bigfoot-like creatures that he feeds and which he claims has taken others to see. They never seem to take a scientist, though. You know what I mean? Why is that? He also claims that they have a language and that they will try to communicate with him and anyone he is with at the time, in a language he claims that sounds eerily similar to Native American Salish. He says of these bizarre encounters, and I quote, "It usually happens at night, late night, like around 3 a.m. But sometimes, if I'm lucky, during the day. They follow me now when I'm in their area after I have left them some food. They always follow uphill in my blind spot, like a soldier does. Sometimes they just stand away from me and look at me. This last time they were there, 3 other people were with me. They heard whoops, then a large rock landed 40 feet away from us. Then the brush started crashing. Then one individual, 7 foot tall and 100 feet away, looking over a tree fall, stared at us. Others with me observed that one too. I approached and spoke in Native American Salish, 'Come here, friend.' A female individual stepped from behind a tree 30 feet from me. It looked at me, then smiled shyly and stepped back behind the tree. She smiled at me and had very white teeth. I do not seek them, only furnish them with some food when in the area so that they will leave me alone. I do not want any problems with them. only a relationship based on mutual respect for each other. They seem very intelligent, and I have heard them speak to each other a couple of times. These creatures are very shy. If you hold up anything in front of your face, they will hide. I'm trying to get them to come into my camp and attempt to communicate up close to them. If I am able to do that, then I will be able to capture a video. Well, I hope you do, because I would love to see that video. I have a couple of questions. How the heck does he know how to speak American Salish or whatever he's talking about? And then to claim that it understood him? Boy, that is a claim. So, yeah, hopefully I'll get to see that video. What about when you hear the stories of, like, Albert Ostman, people that are kidnapped? I mean, and if you don't remember the Albert Ostman story, I'll kind of give you a quick cliff note version. A lumberjack named Albert Ostman, of course, encountered a family of ape men, he called them, during a camping trip in the remote forest of British Columbia in 1924. Now, one night, so the story goes, Ostman awoke to the realization that he was being carried off while still in his sleeping bag. I remember my cousins, we were kids camping, and I had a similar experience. It's pretty scary. He said that he was unable to wrangle himself free, and his captor had held him over one shoulder and was moving rapidly over the mountain terrain, and his hand over the sleeping bag opening. After a couple of hours of this harrowing journey, Ostman was released from his sleeping bag confines and claims to have found himself, get this, surrounded by a family of Sasquatch. He said there was an adult male, an adult female, and two children. One was a girl, one was a boy. They did not attempt to hurt him. Well, this is all according to Ostman. But they made it clear that he was not allowed to leave. Over the next few days, the forest beasts chattered to each other with grunts and monosyllabic utterances, keeping a close eye on their victim. Finally, Ostman says he hatched a plan to incapacitate the adult male by enticing him to consume an entire tin of snuff. I wonder if it was Copenhagen or Skoll. As the giant creature withered in pain, Ostman was able to free himself and make an escape. Now, after finding his way to a logging camp where other lumberjacks were, they fed him and gave him shelter. Ostman returned home from his torturous trip without telling anyone about his abduction. That is, until 30 years later. He finally told his story after he had heard that several others had come forward with similar tales. The experience haunted him for the remainder of his life, but he never knew why he was taken by the Sasquatch or what became of them and their mountaintop hideaway. Huh. So if you're not familiar with that story, that's basically the short version. But there is another story out there about another man who claims to have been kidnapped by a Bigfoot. Check this out. The man's name is Jason Richardson, who also contacted Cam's favorite website, Cryptozoology News, about a very outlandish experience in which he had allegedly been actually kidnapped by a Bigfoot. He says that during a hike in the wilds of North California at Mount Talek, in the rugged wilderness of South Lake Tahoe, he says that he was making his way along the trail when he heard a sound like a guttural human baby voice before he suddenly lost consciousness and awoke within what appeared to be a cavern. He had no memory of how he had gotten there, and his head was filled with pain. But this would soon turn out to be the least of his worries. He would say of the completely outlandish events that would transpire, and I quote, "When I woke up, I had no idea where I was, and my head really hurt. There were two big bear-like creatures standing up, seemingly arguing with each other in that same guttural tone of voice that I heard earlier back on the trail. I felt the back of my head, and I noticed that I had some blood. Something or someone had hit me hard enough for me to pass out and then carried me along the trail inside this small cave or something. Their paws didn't have claws. and I could tell they resembled human features. To be honest, I wasn't able to make out fingerprints or nothing. But what struck me hard was that they were completely hairless up to the elbow. Their torso and legs were covered in thick red hair, and their feet were even hairier. I couldn't see any toes or any nails either. I was terrified. I had no idea what was going on, and it looked more like a nightmare or something. I thought maybe I had eaten something wrong, or the water had gone bad and I was hallucinating, but I wasn't. What I was watching was real. My hands and ankles were tied up with some type of plant material. They stood tall. I calculated probably between 8 and 10 feet, and I wasn't able to see their heads very well. Then they approached me, and I pissed my pants, literally. I'm not ashamed to say this. I was so fearful, I had no idea if this was it, you know? That's when I saw their heads. Their necks were hairless, and they reminded me of vultures. Their heads had red hair, but also black feathers, or I don't know what it was, but it looked like feathers to me. Their eyes were dark, very dark, and big as they got close to me. They weren't communicating with each other anymore. The tallest one grabbed me by the tied legs and pulled me across the cave, dropping me on the cold surface. I remained silent. I was afraid if I talked, it would make them upset and make it worse. Then the shortest one came by and kicked me in the chest. I almost lost consciousness again. They left me alone for 5 minutes or so, and when they came back, they were carrying what looked like tools, made out of wood and stone. They set my hands and legs free, and I still didn't move. I sat back, with my back on the wall of the cave, and I could feel water run inside my shirt. I think I was starting to get sick. Then they approached me again and grabbed me by the arms and legs, and they threw me outside of the cave. They threw a sharp rock at me and hit me on the back. I ran like I had never run before. I didn't have a backpack, food, or water. I found the trail and eventually got back to my vehicle. When I checked my watch, I realized that I had been captive for about 10 hours. I didn't report this incident. This is the first time I'm sharing this story with anyone. I was embarrassed to talk about it for a long time. I don't know what to think anymore. Man, what are you supposed to make of that story? The thing with these stories is, there's no way to prove it's real. I mean, what's to say the person didn't go in the woods and just fabricate the whole thing? I know a lot of people do that kind of thing. And it's strange, because we'll receive emails from people, and you can tell from the story that they're clearly making it up, or at least I believe that they are. But then there's other people that seem really genuine. Here's the thing that we also don't consider when it comes to these crazy sightings. Could the person that's having these experiences think it's real? They believe wholeheartedly that it's real, but maybe they really are crazy. Like maybe they're hallucinating something. Maybe there's a misfiring of the chemicals in their brain somehow, and they're hallucinating seeing these things and they're not there. Or it's totally real, and these things do step into our world from who knows where and capture people. I like the fact that they cut them loose and threw them out of the cave. Like, get out of here. What about, have you ever heard of a flying or levitating Bigfoot? That's right. One of the strangest accounts I've ever heard of comes from our friend Albert Rosales, who used to run the Flying Humanoid website and had, like, no joke, I'm not even lying, like 17,000 sightings there. Unfortunately, he has taken that website down. I know that over the years, people have personally emailed me saying, hey, man, I can't find his website. Can you give it to me? And I have to be like, man, I'm sorry. He's not doing it anymore. You can, though, get almost all of his sightings in book form. So you might want to check that out. You can go on Amazon and just search up Albert Rosales books, and there's a whole bunch in there. So you might check that out. But this incident that I'm speaking about allegedly happened in January of 1997 out in the remote wilderness of the Chelyabinsk region in the Urals of Russia. See, right now, when you just give that description, I'm instantly like, oh, yeah, I believe this story. I don't know why. Why not, right? Now, here, lodged with the dense trees, was a military radar outpost. And in the early morning hours, apparently, according to the story, one of the soldiers stationed there was out collecting firewood on a cold but clear day. There was supposedly lots of snow on the ground that morning, but a clear trail led to the pre-prepared pile of firewood on site. As the soldier began to gather the wood, he then noticed something very peculiar in the form of two hairy, hulking humanoids covered in dirty reddish hair standing there within the fence perimeter. One of them was gigantic, 7.5 feet tall, and the other one was much shorter, just under 6 foot tall. And the witness would later speculate that they had likely approached the installation drawn to the smell of breakfast cooking in the nearby kitchen. The odd report continues as follows. The soldier thought that the taller entity was a female and the second shorter one probably a child. Both entities had penetrated inside the perimeter of the unit, possibly attracted by the smell of the kitchen area. The witness was carrying an axe and for some strange reason was not afraid, only curious, and walked towards the creatures in an attempt to obtain a better look. Now, amazingly, he wasn't able to approach the pair, since both constantly seemed to move ahead of him. He couldn't make up any ground between them, so he increased his pace, the soldier. But at the same time, the entities increased their moving quickly away from him. Finally, moving faster and faster, the entities jumped up into the air, and momentarily the witness thought that the perimeter fence would hinder their escape. But to his amazement, he saw how both of the hairy humanoids simply zoomed into the air and levitated over the fence. The humanoids then flew away and vanished above the tall pine trees in the forest which surrounded the military installation. The witness then stopped his pursuit, returned back to the fence, and saw two tracks of footprints which were left on the snow. The layer of snow was thick and strong. Evidently, the tall, hairy humanoids were very heavy. However, the footprints seemed to become dimmer and less deep as they neared the fence, indicating that the humanoids apparently began ascending into the air. Now, I have to say, I've heard lots of stories about Sasquatch. I've never heard about them levitating over a fence and just simply flying off. But Albert Rosales is the one I trust for flying humanoid encounters, and my little brother, that's his favorite, is flying humanoids. So I asked him about it, and he said that he's heard more than one account of these flying humanoids being depicted as looking like a Sasquatch. So see, you learn something new every day. So moving on, what about interdimensional Bigfoot? Are you aware of this phenomenon? That's right. There's a curious account that allegedly happened to a witness named Larry Kelm in August of 1980 near Eugene, Oregon. And it's really hard to classify, seeming to point at vanishing Sasquatch being the result of some sort of interdimensional portal. Now, on this day, Larry had decided to take a hike along the Malala Indian Trail, which connects the ridges of Saddle Blanket Mountain and nearby Oak Ridge. Now, at some point during his hike, the witness claims that his surroundings all of a sudden became blurry, overcast, and tinged with an odd gray color, despite the sunny weather. And even though there were no clouds in the sky, it seemed as if shadow had been cast over the land. Larry would say later that the only way I can describe it was as if suddenly I was looking through someone else's prescription sunglasses. I finished the step and started another. Every inch that I moved forward, the darkness increased, and the gray blurring turned into a jumble of shapes that made no sense. Then, as suddenly as this had all happened, Larry reports that he seemed to pass through a barrier, and that everything returned back into crystal clear focus, but that it was now nighttime and the wind had completely ceased. upon looking around himself, Larry found that the scenery had changed in other bizarre ways as well. Instead of the fir trees that had been around him before, there was now thick, unrecognizable wild vegetation similar to that in a jungle. And the air seemed to be thick and oppressively humid. Even though it was now night, there was no discernible moon in the sky. He found that he could still see everything to some degree, as if there was some mysterious light source casting a faint frosting of light upon the new strange landscape. At this point, Larry claims that the air was pierced by a continuous, high-pitched keening sound, which immediately filled him with an unbearable sense of dread. The witness explained the really quite bizarre events that followed as, he said that it was at this point I heard a whispered, "Gotcha," over my right shoulder. I couldn't tell if I heard it with my ears or inside of my head. The word wasn't directed at me, but something said the word quietly to itself. At this point, I was so terrified, I actually felt my heart stop for a moment. That whispered word is what saved me. I opened my mouth and gasped in a huge gush of thick air and recoiled backward in the same footsteps I had entered whatever this was. As I threw myself backward, I looked over my right shoulder. A dark-colored, hairy right hand and arm were reaching for my throat over my shoulder. The hand had pale, ivory spade-shaped fingernails. The nails looked clean and almost had a manicured look to them. The thumb was placed lower towards the wrist on the hand than a human's is. Both hand and arm were thin and powerful looking, and both were covered with thick, coarse black hair. I got a good look at it because the thumbnail grazed my neck and did not break the skin as I moved backwards. As I continued backwards, the hand clutched where my neck had been a split second before, and it seemed to fade off into the distance as I returned through the portal. Man, it kind of sounds like, I'm thinking of Stranger Things, right? What do they call that? The Upside Down, where it like looks, it could be daytime, then you go through the portal and instantly it's like the other side of the same room or same area you're in. Now it's all black and creepy looking vegetation everywhere. So it kind of looks like where you were, but it's like a different version of where they were. And that's pretty cool. He says that as soon as he had scampered a few more steps backwards, Larry found himself back in the cool mountain air he had left behind and back to his familiar surroundings. And the portal before him seemed to be an oval-shaped patch of shimmering air that slowly faded away until it was gone. So he could literally see the portal. Larry then ran off towards his truck as fast as he could without looking back. A terrified witness later would reflect on what had happened to him and came to the conclusion that it had been some sort of interdimensional trap. He said, "On my way home, I was absolutely horrified at the thought of what would have happened if I were to drive my truck into something like that. It had been a trap, pure and simple. Whatever it was that tried to kill me somehow kept the portal hidden from me on the way in, and I didn't actually see it until I was back out again. I had terrible nightmares for years after that, and I still haven't come to grips with what truly happened." Wow. I got one more for you. If that story's not crazy enough, not just levitating Bigfoots, not just flying Bigfoots, not just interdimensional portal jumping Bigfoots, what about Bigfoot being galactically introduced, like some sort of wolf pack being reintroduced to Yellowstone by aliens from another world? That's right, you heard me right. One of the most intriguing cases I've ever come across was from a man named J.C. Wyatt of Memphis, Tennessee, who shared with paranormal expert Brad Steiger a copy of his grandfather's journal from 1888. Now, in it, it described the old man's exposure to the Bigfoot phenomenon way back in the 19th century. The location was Humboldt Meridian in northwestern California. It was while in the area on one particular day that Wyatt's grandfather encountered what he called a tribesman carrying a plate of raw meat. Puzzled, he asked what it was for. After pondering on things for a while, the man motioned Wyatt Sr. to follow him. On arriving at a cave built into a cliff face, he was shocked to see a huge, hair-covered, man-like beast. It was, however, quite docile and enthusiastically ate the meat provided for him. It was then that Wyatt's grandfather got the full story. The beast, which had a name, they called it Crazy Bear, has supposedly been brought to the forest from the stars. That's right. Nothing less than a small moon had descended, ejecting both the creature and several others of its kind. The moon was reportedly piloted by very human-looking entities that always waved at the Indians as they dumped the hairy beast on their land. Now, can you imagine that? It's like somebody who adopts a dog or a pet and then has to move, and then rather than put them down or give them to a loved one or take them along with them, they just kind of like drive to a park and drop the animals off. That's what this is what this sounds like. Like these entities, these human-looking entities are flying down and kicking these Bigfoot out of their spacecraft and just leaving them there in the woods. Like I said, maybe they're trying to reintroduce these things, like a wolf pack, like they did in Yellowstone years ago. I don't know. I don't know what to make of these crazy stories. I don't know if you do either. I hope you're entertained. The story of Bigfoot gets crazier and crazier and crazier the more you look at it. But I enjoyed those. Let's take a break. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. And we're back with Expanded Perspectives.
Bizarre.
Hope you like some of those stories. Like we talk about Bigfoot all the time on this show, one of the most popular cryptids of all time. I find myself going back and forth, whether it's real, whether it's not. But and I'm going to be honest. When I hear the wacky, the crazy sightings, I don't know why, but I'm like, I don't believe that. Because it sounds outlandish.
Yes.
Which is crazy. Because as ridiculous as it sounds, you know, here I am arguing with myself about an unknown proven animal. I'm like, well, maybe that explains why we never find them. You never find the bones. All that.
Yep.
Because they truly are extraterrestrial or intradimensional, that would explain that. And you're like, but that's crazy. That's too, I don't know why, excuse me. And it's like too crazy. I can't get on board, but maybe that's the easiest explanation.
Mm-hmm.
Like the reason it sounds crazy is because it's crazy.
It's crazy.
One of my favorite ones was when the spaceship came down and a human-like being was piloting the thing. And it released a couple Sasquatch into the woods and then flew off. Like they're reintroducing wolves into Yellowstone. Like, I don't know where these are. Do they hate them on their planet and they're just moving them over to our
That's how they get here. That's what they're doing here is they're releasing Sasquatch.
That's what one of the sightings claimed.
They're rehoming them. Or here's what it is. They've got them as pups because they're cute when they're puppies. And as they got big, they can't take care of them. So they just bring them here to drop them off.
That's exactly right.
They just dump them. They're dumping Sasquatch on this planet.
I love that story. I hope that's real.
I'm going to say it is from now on. I'm going to say this is fact.
You know what I mean, though? Like, I know you're the same way. Like, how can it be real? But then at the same time, how come so many people see them?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
and there's no physical evidence.
Hundreds of thousands of documented sightings from all over the world. There's no telling how many haven't been documented.
And a footprint isn't physical evidence. I'm talking about like a body. Like I still say, the only way we're going to get to the bottom of this, somebody's going to have to shoot one and bring it in.
I agree with you.
And why that hasn't happened, the only answer is because they're not fully flesh and blood.
It has to be, right?
I love anything like they're talking about stepping through wormholes and stargates and portals in time and space. I just love the idea of Bigfoot traveling like that. But I like the idea more of them just dumping them on this planet because they want them gone. That's my favorite. Yeah. It's a Bigfoot. This entire planet's just a Bigfoot sanctuary. And maybe that's what they're doing in the ocean. They're just releasing more of their sea monsters. Whatever place that the grays come from is not safe.
man, I mean, there's been a lot more coming out about that.
Yeah.
In 2021 so far. I can't wait for that. What was that, like 150 or 180 days?
180 day.
I can't wait to see what comes out
of
that.
Yeah, we should end up knowing this summer. I am pumped.
What do you got coming up? I know that you're leaving town.
Yep, I leave town in the morning.
You told the elite members, but go ahead and tell the free folks.
So what's happening is I am going to Van Horn, Texas, to Top of Texas Outfitters. Scotty out there that runs that whole big shindig is having a bunch of people down. I say a bunch, there's like five of them coming down. So it's going to be Blake and Rob from the Stickbow Chronicles. I'm going, Blake and I are heading out there in the morning to meet. Rob's flying down. Justin and Terry, two other fellas flying in, traditional archers. Aaron from Kifaru International. Aaron's already out there.
Aaron Snyder.
Aaron Snyder, yep. Snyder's already out there guiding with Scotty. And we are, West Campbell, there's been a few of them out there already rifle hunting, but these are all going for trad. I'm going to video and document the entire thing, the five-day hunt of the guys, a stick bow trad hunting, Owdad, trying to spot and stalk them in the canyons and cliffs and all that stuff out through there.
Man, that
So I'll be out there a week, and then we get back, and 36 hours later, I turn around and go to Colorado for another week.
But that's just like a
ski trip. That's for family. Yeah, this just came up kind of on a whim is how this happened. We had planned the family trip a while back, but this just kind of sprang up over the last few weeks, and it's just been in the culmination of doing that. So I get to go have a little fun with that.
That sounds pretty cool.
The drive, you know, is not going to be fun to go all the way out there, but.
Man, the drive from here to Van Horn is a long haul.
The good thing is you just get on Interstate 20 and just stay on it.
Yeah, you stay on it a long time till you have to switch to go to El Paso.
Yeah, to get to 10. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be, yeah, it's just a long, long drive. It's real easy to get to, well, and there's not a lot there.
Make sure you're posting frequently on Instagram and stuff.
I will.
I'd like to see some of the photographs.
Yeah, I'll send you a bunch of stuff
and
get it posted.
On just even hunting tactics for Owdad. I mean, it's not like you can walk up on them. We're talking about an area that doesn't have a whole lot of trees.
Yeah, it's all going to be like brush. Like when I say brush, we're talking like yucca. And like scrub brush and rock. And yeah, it's going to be difficult. It's a lot of them where they get off in those blowouts and you sneak up and got to, you know, look down on them. And now you're talking about getting close enough to harvest them with trad equipment. So to kill one, you're going to have to be within less than 30 yards. Lots of guys like them, like me, I like them 20 yards or in. Like, you know, I'd like to be within 10 yards of one.
Are you taking the drone?
Yeah, I'm taking everything, man. It's all going. Yeah.
I mean, not using that for spotting animals, but I like for some fancy B-roll. That'd be pretty cool.
Yep. All of it's going.
Because, you know, like when you drive through there and you see those awesome rock formations always when you're driving, I was like, I think golden hour when the sun's going down, mm-hmm. you can get some really cool shots.
Well, and you don't realize what it looks like until you get off the road where you can really get it. Because the roads are going to be built where it's easiest to build the road.
Make sure you terrify the guys one evening around the campfire.
That's already been discussed.
All the illegal aliens that are and drug running mules that come across there in the middle of the night. Like, just make it extra creepy. Like, kill all the hunters.
Yeah,
like,
That's already been discussed. So the guys we've talked about, and I said, well, I'm going to tell some stories that's going to have you dudes afraid to go out in the dark whenever I get done. And they're here we go. So, yeah, it'll be fun.
Awesome. Well, if you have any stories, please send them to me and Cam. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show if you don't feel like typing it all up, 888-393-BRUD. That's 888-393-2783. That's about all the time we have for this week's show. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.